Wherever cancer is, Hancock Health will fight. In any part of you and in all corners of East Central Indiana. From Indianapolis to Greenfield, to Knightstown to Greensburg. From hospital rooms to family rooms, we fight. With technology and medicine. With care backed by the wisdom of Mayo Clinic. For you, for your family, and for your future in Decatur County. We fight cancer here. HancockHealth.org/cancer.
Hammer and Nigel.
Can you believe these characters
are weirdos?
So let's rock!
My name is Nigel. Jason Hammer right over there. You did me a big favor last night, my man. I appreciated it. You watched the Indiana GOP governor's debate, so I wouldn't have to. It was my 10-year-old's birthday. We had family over, and I was really not interested. I will watch it tonight because you're gone tomorrow, and I will let our listeners know anything they missed for tonight's debate. I believe it's on Wish, right? Our news gathering partners.
Back-to-back debate nights. Like in the NBA, you always hear, someone is coming off of a back-to-back.
Yeah.
Well, the debate candidates are coming off of a back-to-back tonight. Wish TV has it. And friend of the show, Phil Sanchez, he's a part of the moderating crew tonight.
Okay.
But let's get into last night. You had Mike Braun, Brad Chambers, Suzanne Crouch, Eric Doden. Those were the ones on the stage. Those who were not on the stage were Jamie Ridenour and Curtis Hill. Now, tonight, Curtis Hill will be on the stage for the Wish TV debate. But Jamie Ridenour, best she could do is debating Rob Kendall earlier in the day.
I know. Again, it's this polling kind of threshold that they have, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
So my thoughts on the debate last night, and we're going to play some sound clips in case you missed it. And judging by the interest in ratings, you probably did. We'll play some audio here in just a moment. But my takeaway is this. I'm somebody that when I haven't been on air, right? I was a marketing director and events director. That was kind of my thing. Did that at the casino. I did that here at the old ownership at the Emmis building prior to getting handed the keys to the afternoon show. The way that was set up last night bothered me. The structure of the debate, because they were trying to get so much in an hour.
There was no commercials.
Right. And it was rapid fire, which, okay, that's great, short attention span theater, but let's be honest, some issues warrant more of a discussion, more of a debate than others. Like last night, the topic of should we all be on the same time zone got the same amount of time as dealing with the taxes in Indiana, the property and the gas. Now, with all due respect to my time zone people, I think one of these is a little bit more important than others.
I mean, time zone is of interest to some, but probably, yeah, the property tax issue, taxes, gas tax is maybe something you want to concentrate on just a tad more.
Right.
So maybe
right.
Give it a 30 extra seconds. I don't know.
And it wasn't until 27 minutes in until that topic was brought up. And Nigel, you know as well as I do, you've seen focus groups, you've seen numbers. People who watch these debates, they're not hanging on every word. They're probably, unless you're a diehard political animal, and some of you are, you're not watching that entire thing. You probably saw the first couple of minutes and thought, well, this sucks. Let's see if Impractical Jokers or something is on. And that's kind of where I felt last night. And I'm into this kind of stuff. So the debate opened up last night, and the question was, what grade would you give current Governor Eric Holcomb for his time in office?
We'd like to now ask each of you for a letter grade to rate Governor Eric Holcomb's time in office.
So you'll each have time to explain, but we'd like that grade first, one by one. Mr. Braun, your grade for Governor Holcomb.
I'll give that a B minus.
Crouch, your grade.
Something's an A, something's a C.
A or C, Mr. Chambers.
Yeah, I'll give him Governor Holcomb an A.
Mr. Doden.
Oh, I focus on the future. I do not grade past leaders.
Oh, such a weenie response right there. I don't grade past leaders.
I heard Doden on Rob and Casey's show the other day. I didn't really know much about him. Seemed like a likable enough guy. But yeah, the A from Chambers?
An A. Like, so if you were a business owner that was told you're a petri dish and kick rocks because you want to open up and make a living, that guy just said that was fine. That's two thumbs up, an A grade.
You may have lost a few votes for that.
The answer I was most intrigued with was Suzanne Crouch's, because she's the lieutenant governor, right? So she was the wingman or wingwoman, so to speak, to the governor of the United States, of the state of Indiana. So this was her breaking down why she gave an A and a C to Eric Holcomb.
With the economy, we're number one in the Midwest. We're sixth in the nation for our business environment. That would be an A. On COVID, looking back, that would be a C. And as governor, we will not have lockdowns, masks, or mandates when I'm governor because of what it has done to Hoosiers with the increase in anxiety and depression, particularly among our young people. And those young Hoosiers are the future of Indiana.
Yeah, that's the grade would be F, in my opinion, in terms of COVID.
COVID was an F,
yeah.
Right? If you want to tell me he did things well from an economic standpoint,
sure.
All right, let's have that conversation. But there's a lot of business owners around here that did everything right. They listened to the advice. They followed the experts. They weren't marching up and down the street throwing bricks through windows. And they were called a petri dish by this current governor. That's a shame. Another point that was brought up last night was illegal immigration in Indiana. Now, again, this is a important topic, but this was brought up before property taxes. This was brought up before the gas tax. The question was, would you use Indiana resources to deport criminal illegals in the state of Indiana, those not seeking asylum? Really, Mike Braun was the only one that kind of showed any backbone answering this question.
Anyone that barged into this country and got released into its interior without a credible fear, that's the criterion. Biden allowed that. Anyone that came in that way will have to leave. And you've seen what governors have done in Florida and in Texas, and you judge for the Hoosiers to see who would actually take that kind of action. I would do that. I wouldn't count on that here otherwise.
And everybody else kind of danced around it, you know, to give long-winded answers until the bell dings.
I don't understand what's wrong with deporting somebody that's here illegally that's committed an actual crime within the state of Indiana. It's one thing to be here illegally and not seeking asylum. I understand that. I get that. But if you've committed, like, drunk driving or something like that, Hammer, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
I don't understand how that's a problem. And it's apparently a problem down in Texas as well.
The other thing that I didn't like last night was we didn't get to hear from all the candidates on certain questions. Because you know me, I'm a death penalty guy. I am romantic when it comes to the death penalty.
Sure.
I like it when bad guys die.
You want to start a death penalty pay-per-view channel?
I do. And maybe one day when I run for governor, we'll have that. But really, only Doden was asked about the death penalty yesterday, and it was specifically about those dealing fentanyl.
So in 15 seconds to clarify there, would that involve potentially the death penalty? If you were elected governor, would you push for that?
Well, I said I'm pretty clear to the full extent of the law, whatever that law allows.
Okay, so that's a yes, I guess. I don't know. Everybody was a little wishy-washy last night, but specifically on that question, which only Doden got to answer, it was kind of a half-assed, whatever the extent of the law is. I hope Wish TV tonight, I want all the candidates up there. What about some of these scumbags that are on death row in Indiana that are completely out of appeals?
Sure.
And there's a couple of them. There's a couple of them that are totally out of appeals. A cop killer, the Shoney's murderer, they're all there. Curious to find out what these folks think. And then after 27 minutes, taxes were brought up. The question, would you decrease the gas tax? Here's Mike Braun.
So when it comes to the gas tax, the income tax, property tax is really what I hear the most about. We dealt with that when I was in the state legislature. And when a gas tax or a diesel tax would be used for roads and bridges, it wasn't before. We're the crossroads of America, and it costs to keep it like that. If we lose that comparative advantage, you're going to be in trouble. So community crossings, which generates cost sharing between state and communities across the state, local and county governments, They complained about it at first. Now they love it. If we want to keep what we're known best for, if we want to get economic development into this state, you got to make sure your infrastructure is in good shape. When it comes to that, and that happened years ago in the state legislature, that's why we've got roads and bridges in good shape. And almost 48 out of 50 stakeholders said they were for it when that occurred. I'll listen again.
So to follow up here, you're referencing your vote in 2017 in the state house. You voted to support that 10 cent a gallon increase signed into law by the governor. Would you vote the same way on that today? 30 seconds.
I would. I don't think we need a tax increase on gas.
It goes up every year.
In general, the thing we probably ought to be looking at is how do we keep property taxes from getting out of control? And there are other ways
stop that, Allison. It goes up every year.
Like, what do they think he was going to say about the gas tax? Yeah, we should abolish the gas tax. That's all. He voted for it.
Right.
And, right, like you said, in perpetuity, it goes up every year depending on, on what the price of oil is.
So the question should be, are you willing to put a cap on the gas tax?
Yeah.
Here is the answer to that same question from Chambers.
I'm glad you brought up the 2017 gas tax increase that Senator Braun supported. That would have been the largest tax increase in state history. But this is about the total palette of taxes. It's about income tax, property tax, gas tax, sales tax. Indiana is pretty competitive. We can always work to get that down over time without pulling the resources away from education and supporting our police and addressing mental health and health care. We have to look at the entire package of taxation in a package, not just one individual tax here and there. We do need to, we were number one in the country for infrastructure in 2022. We need to continue to make progress in infrastructure. And so we'd have to evaluate that in context of all other taxation. At the end of the day, we're number nine in the country. We'd like to get that down even further, but not at the expense of public safety or education as well.
So basically, nobody wants to do anything with the gas tax. That's what I took away from everybody on that stage last night.
And then what is the plan for lowering property taxes? Did we learn anything specific there? Because as far as I know, Jamie Rittenhour is the only one that has a specific plan for property taxes.
They talked about it.
They said
the words property tax,
right.
But nobody gave any sort of insight on how they were going to actually help. And hopefully our friends at Wish TV tonight can get to the bottom of some of these plans that everybody claims they have.
We'll follow up tomorrow for sure.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
You're listening to the Hammer and Nigel Show.
About that, huh? Indiana State moving on to the Final Four of the NIT after beating Cincinnati. Who's the tall, kind of goofy-looking guy with the rec specs?
Larry Nerd, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Robbie Avalai. He played well last night. Hit some big threes, sealing the game up for the Sycamores, and they move on to the Final Four of the NIT, which is at Hinkle Fieldhouse this year. So hopefully, good turnout for the Indiana State fans.
What about Purdue women's basketball? Would you happen to know off the top of your head about the NIT?
They are still playing in the NIT.
Yeah,
the Fighting Katie Geraldses.
That's right, your cousin.
They're still playing in the NIT, and the IU women have moved on to the Sweet 16 of the Big Dance,
right,
the NCAA tournament, where I think they play the undefeated number one team in the country, South Carolina, next.
Oh, boy.
Now, obviously, all eyes are on Purdue men's team Friday night in Detroit, taking on Gonzaga for a chance to go to the Elite Eight. If Purdue wins on Friday, they will then play on Sunday against the winner of Tennessee and Creighton. So some big games ahead, but
yeah, man,
we'll see what happens here. According to a new survey, Nige, 51% of Americans agree with the statement, "I think of my car as part of the family." Do you fall into the category of Americans who put their car in with the family?
My truck's got 180 some odd thousand miles on it. It's getting close to quitting time with this guy. And you know what? A small tear is going to roll down my cheek when I finally get rid of Blanche the Lanche.
Blanche the Lanche.
I got to drive an Avalanche.
And, okay.
I believe I bought it in the last. They don't make them anymore. So they might still be worth something. I don't know. But yeah, I'm close to being done. I just don't know what to do. Like after, like what the process is of buying a car. I haven't had to buy a car in 12 years. And I understand the process has completely changed.
Yeah.
In some respects, anyway.
But there are a number of different places that make it easy.
Sure.
We bought our son's car from Ed Martin. They made the process really easy. Kathy, who I believe is part of the ownership there, she came by. Talk to us. It was
she's great.
Easy peasy, man. What about you, Allison? Do you have anything, whether it's a pet, whether it's a car, that you consider part of the family?
Oh, I definitely consider all pets part of the family.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Don't look at me like that.
Like, there's a difference between
car?
Like, but there's a difference between like loving your pet and thinking it's part of the family, or being one of these crazy cat ladies.
I lean towards crazy cat lady.
Do you really?
Yeah.
What do you have? What kind of?
I have two dogs. I have a pug and a French bulldog.
And do you talk in like the baby talk to them? Who's a good doggy? Who's a good doggy?
No, I just have normal conversations.
You know, the thing,
which may be worse.
The thing with pets is, I think after we had two cats, one died a year ago, and after the other cat goes, no more. I can't take that kind of, I can't take the awful emotion. And, sitting there watching my daughter, my 9-year-old at the time, she was 8 at the time, devastated because one of the cats had a disease in the liver or whatever. I just can't go through that kind of emotional toll anymore. So,
but as they get older, it gets easier, I think.
My pet ownership as of Gary, who is my black cat that we have, after Gary goes, that's it. No more.
So we've had a few pets that have passed away.
Yeah.
We decided we wanted to get another cat because I think it helps scare the mice away in the house.
That is true.
More so, I think, than dogs. Like, we had two dogs, Sable and Foley. God love them. They were awesome. They were very protective of our kiddos when they were babies. Well, ultimately, they both passed away. And the kids, to their credit, thought it would be disrespectful to the memory of Sable and Foley to get replacement dogs. So we got replacement cats instead. 29 years ago, on this date, 1995, Forrest Gump beat Pulp Fiction and The Shawshank Redemption for Best Picture at the Academy Awards.
I agree with that assessment, even though Shawshank was amazing. By director Frank Darabont. Forrest Gump was better. If I had to pick choice between the two, Forrest Gump probably better.
I know I'm in a super minority. I have never liked Pulp Fiction. I'm not a Tarantino guy, though. Like, to me, Pulp Fiction was dumb. It was boring. I couldn't get into it.
I understand why some people can't get into it. I loved it. I like Tarantino. I can't wait to see what the next movie is. But like, what's a movie that everyone loves but you hate? You know, that's a good question. So I loved Pulp Fiction. I think it, like, number three on that list between Forrest Gump and Shawshank. That's third, in my opinion. But like The Green Mile, by the same director, Frank Darabont, of Shawshank.
Tom Hanks film.
Tom Hanks film. I didn't like. You know what? Every chick I dated in the early 2000s watched Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind by Jim Carrey.
Oh, that's a turd.
Oh, everybody loved that. And what do you, Allison, do you know what movie I'm talking about?
I do, and I liked it.
Oh.
It's a little slow, but
I can't even remember. I can't even go back and really kind of conjure up what the movie was about.
Is it Serious Jim Carrey?
Yes.
It's
Serious Depressed
Jim
Carrey.
Very depressing.
And then the other one that comes to mind was Black Swan with Natalie Portman, Darren Aronofsky.
Now, there's a scene in that movie, I believe, that I thought you would like. But in terms of the movie as a whole.
Yeah, turd.
So the question becomes, what is a movie that everybody else loves? They crap snowballs over, but you have never liked. Hit us up at Hammer and Nigel, Facebook, Twitter. We're on Instagram, the YouTube chat with the in-studio cameras. They're rocking and rolling right now. Find it. Jump in the chat. What is a movie everybody loves that you just never got into? At Hammer and Nigel.
Crime. Punishment. Judges. Legal stuff.
I have to tell you, Hammer, I'm sort of relieved I haven't heard anything about the pending Delphi murder trial in a week or two. Because, No news is good news as far as I'm concerned, because it sounded like chaos there leading up to the trial of Richard Allen for his alleged murders of Libby and Abby. And so we're a couple of months away from this trial, and we haven't heard anything until now.
Now we've got an update. A new defense attorney will be joining the defense team of Richard Allen, but in a limited capacity. So in a filing that was submitted earlier today, defense attorney Jennifer Auger will join the team of attorneys that are going to be representing Richard Allen, but Jennifer will be working in some sort of limited capacity. The court documents say that she will assist the attorneys with, quote, matters related to the service of process and future depositions of FBI agents associated with the investigation.
Okay. Don't know what that means. Sounds pretty complicated and official, but I'm just... Did what I say make sense, though? Like, I'm just... We were hearing it was day after day after day of accusations of, you know, leaking documents, and then prosecution was, you know, charging, wanting the judge to charge the defense with contempt.
There was a fight in the courthouse.
Yeah, there was between two YouTubers that were going to get called to the stand. The defense doesn't trust the judge, wants her to step down. I'm tired of it. Let's get this thing on, and so we can get some justice for Libby and Abby, hopefully.
First thing I thought of, and again, this is the way my mind works. Anytime a TV show adds a new character, it stinks. So I'm wondering if this is actually going to be beneficial to the defense or not. You know, is this going to be like a great addition like Woody was to the cast of Cheers? Or is this going to be like that little rotten redheaded kid with the freckles that ruined Different Strokes? Thanks for ruining Different Strokes, you little mutant.
I forgot about that kid. That was towards the end of the show, right?
Yeah, that was like a thing for a while. TV shows that were trying to reinvigorate their audience that they lost, they would try to put in a new kid. Cousin Oliver on the Brady Bunch, oh, awful. They tried to bring in a new kid on Growing Pains, awful. I think Full House tried to pump out a few new kids, sucked every time. But nobody was worse than that little mutant that totally ruined Different Strokes.
Oh, wow.
Check this out. Apparently, you can get busted with $1 million in coke and $47,000 in cash and be out on bond the next night. This was something I did not know.
In Indy?
Correct. A Florida truck driver
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
With moving $1 million in cocaine from L.A. to Indy has been released on bond from Putnam County. 41-year-old Miami resident Yanir Pina Machado. If you like Pina Machados and all his cocaine, should have made a Hammer and Nigel record song there. He was arrested last week after the state police pulled him over and they found $1.1 million worth of illegal drugs and $47,000 in cash in his truck. But he paid $40,000 cash bond and he is out. Now, he's been given a date for a pretrial conference, May 22nd, 2024. So my question to you, Nige, what are the chances that Pina Machado shows up to that pretrial hearing?
I'd say zero. How in the world do you get caught with that much China, as they say? Coke.
Colombian Bam Bam.
Yeah, and you're gone the next day? How do you make the bail? Who's making that bail for you? If you're detectives, and by the way, he was on as the paperwork for his itinerary said he was supposed to make it a delivery somewhere in Illinois. And when the police pulled him over, this guy was all nervous and shaking and acting real suspicious. And he was 200 miles away from where his itinerary or whatever.
He missed his delivery by 200 miles.
Yeah, right, exactly. And so, I mean, if you're a detective, don't you want to sit this guy down? I mean, there's got to. What's the bail matrix in Putnam County? That's like Cloverdale, right? That's near. That's that southern Putnam County. I'm flummoxed. I'm perplexed. I don't you want to know where the drugs come from? Who's your guy? Where did you get him? Who's posting bond?
I need somebody in law enforcement to help me out. If you pull somebody over and they've got that much blow and that much cash, and I'm pretty sure the cash they've made from selling the blow, can they use that cash to bail themselves out?
No way.
How are they allowed to use the coke money to bail themselves
honestly,
out?
Honestly, people caught with weed in their car go to jail for the night and then get out the next day. This guy was caught with $1 million worth of coke
and 45 pounds of weed.
And he's out the next day. Nobody knows his whereabouts. All we know is that he has to be back for a court date at the end of May. No way he shows up.
They said he had $47,000 in cash. Did he use more cash to bail himself out?
That's what I'm saying. This guy's connected somehow. I'm sure investigators would have loved to have sat down and maybe questioned this guy.
If you like selling weed at midnight, doing coke in the rain.
Pena Machado. I mean, I guess my question is, I mean, the guy needs a lawyer probably. You can't question him without a lawyer. But there has to be some sort of like, bail was only $40,000.
Right. For $1 million. Bucks worth of drugs.
I'm scratching my head. At Hammer and Nigel, if somebody wants to explain that.
Doing some legal stuff here. Let's go down to Florida. The ultimate Florida man, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, has approved new state law prohibiting minors under the age of 14 from using social media and mandating 14 and 15-year-olds and those below have to get parental consent before they log in. Now, this isn't just for TikTok. This is for Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, Instagram, Facebook, all of it. What do you think?
I don't know how they're going to implement that. How are they going to control that? How are they going to, what's the age verification look like? And is it going to be somewhere, like we were talking about this off the air, I believe it was you that said, like when I get on a beer website, like a craft beer site, it has to make sure I'm 21.
Right.
And it just says, are you 21, yes or no? And I just click, you click yes.
Right. Well,
but that doesn't do anything. You're not verifying anybody's age. My 10-year-old can get on the same site.
Right. Remember years ago, if you bought like illegal fireworks in the state of Indiana, you had to sign this waiver that says you're going to take them to Kentucky and blow them up or take them out of state.
You
and blow
will not
them up.
Light these in state.
Right. So ridiculous. I'm wondering if it's something similar to that. The Florida lawmaker, though, who wrote the bill says, quote, the internet has become a dark alley for our children where predators target them and dangerous social media leads to higher rates of depression, self-harm, and even suicide.
And that's where the parents come in to monitor that. I have a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old. They're not on social media. They won't be for a while.
So for those kids in Florida that feel like they're not going to be able to post on social media because they're underage, perhaps the book that we came out with could help them out.
Oh. New from Hammer and Nigel. Are you a social media loser? Not enough likes on Facebook? Nobody seems to care when you post a stupid selfie of you and your dog? Well, Hammer and Nigel have the answer. Vague booking for dummies. That's right. Vague booking for dummies. If you're not getting the attention you deserve on Facebook, just post an intentionally vague status update, then sit back and watch the flood of concern pour in. It's real simple. All you need is a couple of words and a few punctuation marks at the end. For example, the one-word post.
Devastated. Dot, dot, dot.
The religious post.
Prayers needed. Dot, dot, dot.
Reminder, never say why prayers are needed.
The philosophical post.
What's the point? Question mark, question mark, question mark.
There's even vague booking for millennials.
I literally just can't even right now. Dot, dot, dot.
If you're an attention whore that loves when people ask what's wrong, you need vague booking for dummies. Don't forget about the regretful post.
I should have known better. Dot, dot, dot.
Get our personal favorite, the emotional song lyric post.
I'm sorry for everything that I've done, but when I called, you never seemed to be home.
Booking
for Dummies from Hammer and Nigel. Available everywhere.
I can't believe you're gone.
Yes!
It's a bestseller.
It's going to be a big seller in Florida.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
I drive these brothers crazy. I do it on the daily. They treat me really nice.
Fergie?
They buy me all these
Fergie
ices.
Ferg.
If you need a reason to drink tonight, Fergie is 49 years old.
Damn, Fergie's pushing 50 now?
Can I tell you, I met Fergie when I was doing afternoons here on this signal when it was Radio Now 93.1 backstage. She was playing some show at the Murat Theater. And it was such a weird experience because, like, this was at the height of her fame, like, really, really famous, really just, I mean, we were playing her songs hour after hour after hour. And so I show up and I'm thinking there's going to be all this security. I'm going to jump through all these hoops trying to get backstage to interview her, right? So I knock on the side door of the facility there, the Murat, and the guy goes, hey, yeah? I go, yeah, Nigel, Radio Now, here to interview Fergie. He's like, yeah, come on in. And then he leads me backstage, and there's a manager or something outside her door, and I go, I'm supposed to interview Fergie, Nigel from Radio Now. He's like, oh yeah, go on in. I go, do I have to knock? He goes, nah, just go on in. And I walk in there, and she turns around, and she's eating cottage cheese. I go, hi Fergie, I'm Nigel. I'm here for the interview. You know, it's kind of nervous actually. I don't know what this. She was totally down to earth, coolest chick.
Really,
one of the best interviews I've ever done. I think. I wish I could find it.
Was she fully dressed?
She was fully dressed,
That's
yeah.
a shame.
And there's a picture of us somewhere. Maybe I could try to find it. Her and I took a picture of the cottage cheese that she was eating together. Like, she was eating out of the actual tub of cheese.
She's 49, but she's still got her fastball. She's still an attractive woman. I don't care what you think about her music, but she's hot. She's still got
Don't you think that's weird that I was able to get back there so fast, with sort of lackadaisical?
What if some stranger would have said, I'm Nigel. Went back there and hit her with a bat or something, right?
I love that our manager said, I was trying to be professional. Do you want me to knock? He's like, nah, it's going in.
It's Fergie. she was married to that dude from the Las Vegas TV show, Josh Duhamel, for a long time. I don't think they're married anymore.
He's a good-looking man.
Yeah, that's a good-looking couple. So if you need a reason to drink tonight, Fergie is 49. Great moments in Fergie history, aside from the interview with Nigel. This was the 2019 NBA All-Star Game. She sang the national anthem.
Bad number, yeah.
Ooh.
For the land of the free. And the home of the brave.
And the best part about that is the camera, you know, it's going down the line of all the all-stars. They're trying not to laugh. Draymond Green just breaks out. He starts cracking up.
It wasn't the worst rendition of the anthem I've ever heard.
There's some strange
parts in that, though, for sure.
And that was just like the last part. I didn't play the first 7 minutes. I mean, it was a long rendition of the national anthem. Great moments in Fergie history. I think this counts because we like cover songs on this program. This is when Alanis Morissette covered My Humps.
What you gonna do with all that ass inside them jeans? I'm gonna make you scream, make you scream, make you scream.
You into that?
I really like the version in Blades of Glory better when Will Ferrell was doing it.
Walking on the treadmill.
Yeah. I like that version a whole hell of a lot better.
Blades of Glory, underrated film. Nobody's ever going to say that's their favorite Will Ferrell movie. And when you think of John Heder, it's Napoleon Dynamite.
Yeah.
But he was pretty good in that, too. All right, where are we at with this? Ice Cube, former rapper, actor. Now he runs that Big Three basketball league, right?
He just won some huge award for that, too. Yeah.
He is now saying that the Big Three basketball league has made an offer to Caitlin Clark, $5 million to join his Big Three basketball league and not play in the WNBA for the Fever, most likely.
Yeah. Caitlin Clark, I mean, again, one of the best basketball players ever in the history of women's college sports, broke the all-time scoring record, men and women. I think she's going to be able to make a ton of money on endorsements, and to be affiliated with the NBA and the WNBA is probably,
right.
probably something. I'm not saying Ice Cube's doing bad. That league's doing very well.
And it's fun to watch. If you've ever laying around on the couch on a Sunday, you know, it's like older NBA dudes that are a bit washed, but they take it seriously.
It just seems like it's more of a novelty than a pro sports league.
Right.
She wants to go to go play with the best in the world.
Her brand can grow with the marketing machine of the NBA behind them.
Yeah.
Because that's who runs the WNBA.
Hammer and Nigel.
Can you believe these characters are weirdos?
So let's rock it!
My name is Nigel. That's Jason Hammer over there. Quick update on the response from the Baltimore Bridge Dispatch that helped save the lives by quickly communicating that all the traffic had to be stopped on both sides of the Key Bridge. Remember yesterday, early yesterday morning, a cargo ship got out of control. The engine died, the power went out, and it ended up hitting a pillar across that bridge. It collapsed the whole bridge like a load of toothpicks. Just incredible footage. They're still looking for, well, they're not looking for them anymore. They're trying to recover them. They pretty much pronounced the 6 construction workers dead. Here is the dramatic communication as they work on that as soon as they heard that there was a problem with the cargo ship.
I need one of you guys on the south side, one of you guys on the north side, hold all traffic on the Key Bridge. There's a ship approaching that just lost their steering. So until you get that under control, we got to stop all traffic.
I'm en route to the south side.
Yeah, if we can stop traffic, just make sure no one's on the bridge right now. There's a crew up there. You might want to notify whoever the foreman is and see if we can get them off the bridge temporarily.
10-4, once the other unit gets here, I'll ride up on the bridge.
C-13 dispatch, the whole bridge just fell down. Everybody, the whole bridge just collapsed.
Do we know if all traffic will stop?
I can't get to the other side, sir. The bridge is down.
C-13, I'm holding all traffic northbound.
Yeah, so again, dramatic audio there. The bridge is down, but you heard that Mayday, or the cargo ship was calling for Mayday, Mayday, right. Mayday. And then you heard the guy say, all right, get people on both sides of that bridge to shut that traffic down. And so far, and I think it's pretty much confirmed, imagine how many lives they saved.
Right.
I mean, because there were dozens of cars on that bridge going back and forth as the cargo ship was headed out of control towards that pillar.
How would you feel if you were one of those vehicles that were the last one across?
Oh. I'm sure the news is working on who these people were, right? I would love to hear their story. I would love to, yeah, the very last across. Because then you see, you watch the thing in slow motion, you watch it in real time, the cars stop. So these guys that were working, these first responders and whoever this were, dispatch there, the Baltimore Bridge dispatch saved untold amount of lives. And it sucks. It's horrible that 6 construction workers just doing their job, dangerous right. job, filling potholes at night. They do it at night because during the day there's about 30,000 to 35,000 cars that use that bridge. It's just awful that they, 6 lives lost now. Because of an accident. I'm seeing, I don't know about you, I'm seeing a lot of conspiracy theories on social media.
And a lot of new bridge experts, bridge safety, construction yeah. experts. Now listen, if you are somebody that is legitimately in construction and can explain this to me like I'm 5, I'm open ears. Because it is kind of wild to see this cargo ship hit this one pillar and then the whole bridge just falls in. Like, is that normal? It looks like one of those coordinated implosions you see of stadiums where everything kind of goes off and everything falls in It was wild. Is that normal? Is that what's supposed to happen if a cargo ship of this magnitude hits a pillar like that?
Well, look, it's not unprecedented. I'll tell you that. I mean, you go back to 1980, the Skyway collapse for what is now Interstate 275. Same thing happened. 35 people died in that. Out of control cargo ship hit a pillar there in Tampa. And I mean, this is 1980, but it's not unprecedented. So yeah, you and I think both have traveled 275 south before.
Right.
Of course, it's completely rebuilt and everything, but it's not unprecedented.
We've got a little feud. So Allison, cue up the band. So this happened on a North Carolina radio station, 99.3 WBT. It's a news talk station in Charlotte. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre. Allison, give me the laugh.
Ha ha.
We need one more ha. Huh? It's three.
You
ha ha ha.
Made up for it with the extra one.
That was four. Wait a minute. I only needed three.
So she was a guest on this radio program. I guess Joe Biden's going to North Carolina. It's a swing state. So they had on, ha ha ha, to be a guest. Well, Karine didn't like the questioning of these radio hosts, specifically the news director, Mark Garrison, and she hangs up on the guys. Take a listen.
When I told a number of people that I was talking to you today, it was interesting, though. They all said, would you please just ask her, does the president have dementia? And so before I move on from that, does he?
Mark, I can't even believe you're asking me this question. That is an incredibly offensive question to ask.
But you know people ask it.
No. You're taking us down this rabbit hole. Let me be very clear about this. For the past several years, the president's physician has laid out in a comprehensive way the president's health. You know, take the premise of your question. I think it is incredibly insulting, and so we can move on to the next question.
Gas prices and grocery prices, then, big topics here in North Carolina. How does Mr. Biden win votes when people don't have as much disposable income?
Now you're asking me about gas prices. The president took action on gas prices. Let's not forget Russia's invasion on Ukraine skyrocketed prices of gas. And because the president took action, we're in a different place than we were a year ago on gas prices. Eggs, milk, seafood products, all the important groceries, those costs have gone down because of what the president has been able to do. And with that, thank you so much, Mark. Have an amazing, amazing day.
Wow.
And she hung up.
Wow.
So the White House press secretary apparently is soft as a baby's ass. You can't take a couple questions from a radio host? How do you stand at that podium every single day and do your job, but you can't handle that?
She's been asked that question a million times. I guess her point was she can't, as the White House, as Biden's spokesman, lend any credence whatsoever that the president has dementia. So even answering the question is kind of legitimizing the question a little bit. And look, it's her job. I mean, she's trying to spin it. We all know. We can see the signs. We all have had grandparents or relatives with the same signs that we see Joe Biden acting out every day. The thing with the grocery store prices, that comment afterwards, Hammer, wait, is she joking? Grocery store prices are through the roof.
And that's why she hung up right away, because she didn't want to have any follow-up questions. Like, I don't know who these radio hosts are, but I would hope they would have pushed back a little bit saying,
yeah, that was interesting.
Wait a minute. You don't get to say prices are down when you were the one that set it at a record high. It's still substantially higher than when, your words, your predecessor was there. So, yeah, that was some interesting radio there. One more time, mood music, Allison. Dateline, Washington State. The state of Washington now has a stripper's bill of rights, Nigel.
Really?
And you know what? I'm actually on board with this.
Okay.
I think this is good legislation.
What are we looking at here?
The new law requires training for employees in strip clubs and establishments like that to prevent sexual harassment, identify and report any human trafficking, de-escalate conflict, and provide first aid. It also mandates security workers on site all the time, keypad codes on the dressing rooms, and panic button where the strippers may be alone with customers.
Oh, the champagne room, huh?
Right. So, listen, my experiences as a younger man in the strip club, all positive. I never had anything scary or bad happen. But some of these girls will tell you, these dudes are awful. Some of these dudes are awful to them that go to the clubs.
That's what they get paid for.
It is, but they don't get paid to get sexually harassed, beat, and threatened in the parking lot.
Yeah. And there's a difference.
And that's what this stripper's Bill of Rights is about. And now with the rise of human trafficking, these types of establishments, these strip clubs, they're kind of a hotbed for transactions. So maybe now with a little training, the staff, the girls, the security guards, they can kind of help better keep an eye on everybody.
I will say, I mean, the Red Carter's been down here forever, on downtown. Do they need state mandates? Because it seems like they're doing an awfully good job. You know, do you need the state coming in and mandating things, I guess is what I'm saying? Because they've been around forever. They obviously know what they're doing. It's a longtime institution. Whether morally you agree with it or not, that's not the point of this conversation. I'm just saying the people that run it obviously kind of know what they're doing because it's been around forever.
But you know what, though? It feels like this is the broad ripple conversation. The people who have their act together, this isn't going to affect you because you're probably doing these things already. It's the people that don't want to pay attention by the rules, the people that are a pain in the ass that are making it bad for everybody else. So maybe this is where that comes in. And speaking of strippers, it seems like only yesterday that Phil Collin of Def Leppard called into this show, and we asked him, hey, you know that song, Pour Some Sugar on Me? It kind of became a strip club anthem, and he shared this little anecdote. Phil, when you wrote Pour Some Sugar on Me and you guys performed Pour Some Sugar on Me, did you ever in your wildest dreams imagine that this song would still be a strip club anthem 30 years later?
That's crazy. 30 years is insane. But We knew it had a, you know, it kicked off. It got its birth in the strip clubs. You know, we'd released the album. We had two or three singles that done okay, not great. And then the strippers started requesting this song on local radio in Florida. And that's really how it kicked off. And it became so popular, everyone's going, well, why is this song on all these Florida radio stations? And that was all these girls, these strippers were actually kind of requesting it.
Emily tweets at us, at Hammer and Nigel, in regards to the stripper Bill of Rights. Glad to hear that Rob Kendall's going to be safe when he's up on stage. Thank you, Emily.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Hammer and Nigel presents is
It Depends Upon What the Meaning of the Word Is.
Is this anything?
All right, let's rock and roll.
Hammer, how do we play? Is this anything?
I'm going to run a few different stories by you. You are going to be the one that breaks down all the information and gives us a verdict. Is the story anything or not? We start with this. An overweight alligator was found living behind a former Coca-Cola plant that was ultimately captured, relocated, and now the fat alligator is on a diet to shed some of its 400 pounds.
Wow.
Here are some neighbors from where this big gator used to live.
All the kids know there's a gator there. Don't feed them. Don't mess with them. You know, I don't even allow them over here.
I just hope nobody don't, you know, jump the fence or it don't come out and somebody get attacked.
That's a little heavy for that animal. The trapper caught the alligator and brought him over. It really isn't far away, probably 3-4 miles away. All of our alligators get a mix of pelleted diet. There's a diet made by Missouri. That's the Purina company that's made just for alligators and crocodiles. We feed a lot of that. We also feed fish. We also feed chicken. So we'll do that on a regular basis. And hopefully with time, he'll slender down a little bit.
They're more concerned with this alligator and his diet than they are. Like, you know, there's somebody on Skid Row that doesn't have as good as this alligator does.
Right.
I think it sucks that they said they feed him like chicken and fish. Because I would assume alligators would eat anything. I mean, the scene in Roadhouse, did you watch Roadhouse? That was your assignment.
I have not seen the Roadhouse? New one yet.
Great
no.
scene in Roadhouse involving an alligator. Great scene in Happy Gilmore involving an alligator. But 400 pounds, I wouldn't even think to... It wouldn't even occur to me that, boy, look at that alligator. It sure is getting fat.
Mike Gundy, your thoughts on the alligator?
If somebody makes fun of him or says he's fat...
You're right. We've got veterans that don't get treated as well as this big fat alligator. That's a shame. Is this anything? A dog in Florida playing in the yard... was digging in the yard and found like an unexploded bomb. Here's the homeowner talking about his dog finding the old bomb.
Okay, is this live? You panic and then you drop it. You couldn't really tell what it was until you started to pull it up. And then once I got it like halfway out, I was like, oh, I know what this is. Let me just gently put this back down.
You know, my question would be, like, this is my backyard. Where is this, in Florida?
Yes.
What's a military, an unexploded military device doing in somebody's backyard?
You answered your own question. It's Florida. Florida man was probably having a fireworks display.
No, this is a military grade device. I'm looking at it right now. It's about a foot long, about 10 inches wide. And I'm just, how in the world would that ever wind up in somebody's backyard? It used to be a military installation where I live 50 years ago.
If I had access to it, I would have blown it up on the 4th of July. I'm just telling you that right now.
I don't think so.
You don't think I would
have? I think you probably would have blown up your entire block.
Do I care? It would have been the best 4th of July ever. I'm telling you that right now.
It would have been the final 4th of July ever.
Is this anything? A guy in Australia is in the doghouse after he left his fiance's $2,000 wedding dress on the roof of his car and then drove off. They're offering a $500 reward to anybody who can find it. Here's the bride.
Don't know why the dress was in the car. That wasn't me. As he moved the stuff to put the storage in the car, put the dress on top of the car to not crush it, and then proceeded to drive off. I guess I can replace the dress, but it's just more the frustration of the situation.
Well, you know how she feels. You left your wedding ring on her car, drove off.
I did.
And disappeared. By the way, her accent just reminds me of Shane Gillis' stand-up special on Netflix, Beautiful Dogs. There's that bit in there about how Australian accents will always be funny, no matter what they're saying or what they're doing.
Right.
It was so highly inappropriate. I mean, that whole stand-up comedy special didn't it make you kind of cringe, but you're laughing your ass off the entire time?
I loved it. I think my wife was laughing as hard as I was at times, but it was really good. Now, I admit I still have the assignment of watching the new Roadhouse that you gave me.
Yes.
I haven't got there yet.
Right.
I gave you the assignment of watching the Adam Sandler movie, That's My Boy. Have you seen that?
It just came on Netflix. It wasn't available to even purchase, I don't think, but it's on Netflix now. I have not watched it
yet. Okay, so there's a wedding dress scene in that movie, and that's all I'm going to say. This is the Hammer and Nigel Show.
You're listening to the Hammer and Nigel Show.
This is it. This is what all of those suicide sprints, all of those practices comes down to. The finals of Meltdown Madness presented by Window Nation.
Come on, baby.
Already punching his ticket to the championship game a couple days ago was Tommy Lasorda. Okay? So we had one more matchup to decide who was going to take on Tommy in today's final. It was between Casey Kasem, iconic broadcaster, famous for that Top 40 show. his meltdown and rant behind the scenes against the number one seed in this tournament, Bob Knight.
Sure.
Chewing out his players for a lack of effort, not recovering defensively. We've heard these clips a million times, and we're going to play one again here in just a moment. But to avoid the predictable pattern of what may happen, I'm going to do things a little differently here, Nige.
Okay.
I did this earlier on Kendall and Casey's show, and I think it bears repeating. Here to read their version of Casey Kasem's iconic meltdown is WIBC's Casey Daniels.
He was a little dog named Snuggles, but he was most certainly a part of Let's Go Start Again. See, when you come out of those up-tempo got numbers, man, it's impossible to make those transitions. And then you got to go into somebody dying. You know, they do this to me all the time. I don't know what the hell they do it for, but goddamn it, if we can't come out of a slow record, I don't understand. Is Don on the phone? I want a goddamn concerted effort to come out of a record that isn't a fucking up-tempo record every time I do a goddamn death dedication. I want somebody to use his brain to not come out of a god record that is that's up tempo, and I got to talk about a fucking dog dying.
Oh, no.
AI Casey reading, man. Casey Kasem.
I mean, that sounds like she went into one of these side production studios and read that herself. And you're telling me that's AI?
That's AI
that
Casey.
That is scary, and that is genius.
Now, here to read the rant from Robert Montgomery Knight is AI Robert Kendall.
If you're not going to recover Greg Graham, if you're just going to let him drive by you, if the rest of you are going to let him catch the ball outside the 3-second lane and drive all the way in here without one guy challenging him, then I'm leaving and you f***ing guys can run until you can't even suffer. Now, I'm tired of this sh**. I'm sick and tired of a f***ing 8-10 record. I'm f***ing tired of losing to Purdue. I'm not here to f*** around this week. Now, you maybe, but I'm not.
AI, wow. Rob Kendall doing Bob Knight's
rant. How does
rant.
That work? Is there like a function on that AI website where you can make them sound angry? You know what I mean? Because that Rob sounded angry during that.
I don't want to give away my secrets, but okay. There's a lot of trial and error. Right? Okay. You got to do some lines separately than others.
Oh, wow.
A lot of cutting and pasting goes into that.
Right.
I think we all knew how that was going to play out.
Yeah.
Bob Knight, 80% to 20, yeah, moves on to the finals. And now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it is time for the finals of Meltdown Madness. And just like the old high school basketball days where you'd win a game in the morning and then you'd go back and play for the championship at night,
yep,
that's what Bob Knight's going to have to do here. So before we get going, here to read the official invocation is AI Joe Biden.
Hey, you know, we pray to Jesus, or as they say in France, Jesus. We hope everyone, you know, has a safe birthday.
Sure.
We hope this matchup is almost as fun as sniffing hair of young children. So let's hurry up with this. I have to poop. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you. What a just a touching prayer from the president.
And at this time, we ask those who are able to please rise and remove your hats. Here to perform our national anthem is the little girl from the Pacers game earlier this month.
Are you sure this isn't Fergie?
I saw this live.
Oh, yeah, you were there, weren't you?
Bring it home.
For the land.
down, down, down.
You'll never end.
Had to throw a little Steven Tyler in there.
I liked it. I liked it. And now for the moment that we've been waiting for. It's one of our favorite traditions. Here to perform back home again in Indiana, Jim Cornelison.
When I dream about the moonlight from a Wabash, then I long for my Indiana.
Ah, the pageantry.
There it is.
The heritage, the tradition that is Meltdown Madness on the Hammer and Nigel Show.
If the hair isn't standing up on your arm right now, you're not even alive.
Trust me, I am.
Let's meet the starting lineups.
I love LA.
Coming in as the number 10 seed in this tournament. Pulling off a big upset to beat Bill O'Reilly along the way. Iconic Los Angeles Dodgers manager, Tommy Lasorda. Very upset that anybody would think that he would order one of his pitchers to throw at members of the San Diego Padres, including utility infielder Kurt Bavacqua.
I have never, ever, since I've managed, ever told a pitcher to throw at anybody, nor will I ever. And if I ever did, I certainly wouldn't make him throw at a 130 hitter like a Bavacqua, who could hit water if he fell out of a boat. And I guarantee you this, when I pitched, and I was going to pitch against a team that had guys on it like Bavacqua, I sent a limousine to get the to make sure he was in the motherfucking lineup.
Wow.
That's strong. That's going to be tough to beat.
Yeah, I don't know.
And now for the number one seed in our tournament. To set the mood, Martha the Mop Lady. If you grew up in Indiana and you watch Channel 4, you know exactly what this is.
Starting to tear up a little bit at the nostalgia.
Come on, clap your hands.
Never
come on. The number one seed. The head coach of the Indiana Hoosiers, Robert Montgomery Knight, in a secretly recorded rant inside of the locker room. Very upset that certain members of his team, like Greg Graham, were not giving their all for the cream and crimson.
I mean, if you're not going to recover Greg Graham, if you're just going to let him drive by you, if the rest of you are going to let him catch the ball outside the 3-second lane and drive all the way in here without one guy challenging him, then I'm leaving and you f***ing guys will run till you can't even suffer. Now, I'm tired of this s***. I'm sick and f***ing tired of an 8-10 record. I'm f***ing tired of losing to Purdue. I'm not here to f*** around this week. Now, you may be, but I'm not.
There's your winner right there. I'm sorry. I mean, you know, Tommy Lasorda has had a good run.
It's been backed by the Kendall and Casey Show. It's been endorsed by the Kendall and Casey Show.
Who? Do we know who recorded that locker room rant? Has there been any theory?
I'm sure there is, but I don't know. I'll have to text our pal, the coach. Maybe he knows.
I'm sure we've asked before because we had Greg Graham on the show. We had the coach on the show plenty of times and talked about that.
But they weren't even fazed by it.
Not at all. It was just like, I think Greg Graham said, it was just another Tuesday.
Right. I've heard way worse. Now, producer Allison, go ahead.
There's an internet conspiracy theory that the then student manager, Lawrence Frank, a former NBA coach,
yes,
and president of the basketball operations of the Clippers, he was the one.
Lawrence Frank.
I remember that. I know that name.
Yeah, was the coach of the Nets for a little while.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's out there. Not confirmed, but that's out there.
Curious.
But you know what else is out there? The finals. The poll is live. It's pinned to our Twitter, @HammerandNigel. If you don't have a Twitter or an X account, create one just to vote. Make sure you follow us. It's pinned to the top. Which of those meltdowns do you want to be crowned the champion of this year's Meltdown Madness presented by Window Nation? Tommy Lasorda ranting against Kurt Bavakwa or Bob Knight ripping his team at halftime? Now, you need to understand, Kendall and Casey are really going to push.
Oh, I know.
For Tommy Lasorda during their show tomorrow. So make sure you get your votes in right now.
I don't think it's going to matter.
At Hammer and Nigel, Meltdown Madness.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
You're listening to the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Everything you need to know about that debate last night, GOP Republican governor's debate here for in Indiana, we'll have that after 5 o'clock with Dr. Laura, who is the political science professor there at U of I. Is your kid taking classes, or Dr. Laura Wilson's classes yet?
Yeah.
He hasn't had her as a professor yet. I think he's got her on the schedule for next year.
Gotcha. Okay, so she's going to break it all down for us after 5 o'clock. Remember that scene in Star Wars, Hammer, where the first Star Wars, I mean, you know, A New Hope, when it came out in 19...
I don't want all the nerds going, technically that was the... No. The first one released.
The scene where Luke is having breakfast with Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru, and he's drinking the blue milk. By the way, Aunt Beru, sweet lady, Uncle Owen... bit of a prick.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's drinking that blue milk. A Star Wars brand blue milk is hitting the stores in April.
So in April, I can drink the same milk that the people that shielded Luke.
This is an anticipation and a celebration of the Star Wars Day on May the 4th. You know, May the 4th be with you.
Right.
Mike Tyson would say it that way, probably.
May the 4th.
So blue milk, so you'll be able to buy blue milk. And here is our quick, lame tribute to that.
Blue milk. You can drink blue milk. You can drink blue milk. It's almost here.
Yeah, that's it. That's all I got.
That's all we got?
That's it. That's all we have. Are you going out of your way to buy blue milk?
No. I wasn't going to until I heard that amazing jingle you put together, and now I might buy two bottles.
Not exactly AI Biden, was it?
Kind of had the Bill Murray feel to it right there.
Star Wars, nothing but Star Wars.
Dateline, the UK. All this guy in England had to do at his wedding was repeat these words. I will laugh with you when you are happy, comfort you when you are sad.
Okay.
That's all he had to say. But instead, he said this to his beautiful bride.
I will care for you. Laugh with you when you are happy. Comfort you when you are sad.
Laugh you when you're sad.
No, comfort you when you're sad.
I'll laugh at you when you're sad.
Did you make up your own vows at your wedding? We never did.
No, we just went along with it.
Yeah, we just read what our officiant was, the basic traditional thing. We did not break out. I did not break out a piece of paper and start reading it to Lindsay as I was up there.
Now, yeah, I'm sure we were the same way. Like whatever the officiant said, do you take her to be, I do. That kind of stuff. But I've seen, again, from being a wedding DJ, some of those moments, they go on forever. Like, people need to understand, you don't have to speak for 15 minutes just because you're the center of attention.
Right.
Whether it's the bride and the groom or bridesmaid or best man. And I'm sorry, ladies, but it's bridesmaids who are the worst at this. Because the bridesmaid, she's the one that feels like all eyes are on her. It's not about you. It's about the bride. So you got to understand, to quote The Rock, know your role and shut your mouth. But if we're going to have some fun with this, let's do it. Great moments in wedding history. This is when a groom had very cringy vows that he wrote for his lovely bride.
Only two things are required to keep me happy. Keep my belly full and my balls empty. Well, you're amazing at half of it. We really need to get you some cooking lessons. Even when my belly isn't full, there is no one I could ever love more in this lifetime, unless I actually get a chance to meet Margot Robbie. Since the beginning, I was always told, life gets even better when the kids fall asleep and you tell me to come to the bedroom. Nothing's better than the sound of gagging and headboard slamming.
Michael.
P.S., since you're so good at making decisions like Mary and me, you can choose whether tonight's going to end with being a toaster strudel or a Twinkie.
All right.
This is real.
Being that I am his mom, I will deal with him later. He is grounded, by all means.
That's real.
Yeah, that's not a joke. That was from a real wedding ceremony.
Great moments in wedding vow history. It's the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Hammer and Nigel.
Can you believe these characters are weirdos?
So let's rock it!
Nigel, Jason Hammer right over there with a special guest on the WIBC hotline.
Dr. Laura Wilson is a professor of political science at the University of Indianapolis. She joins us. Doctor, you have been the moderator for a couple different debates. What did you think of the job done by CBS4 last night, the moderators with that gubernatorial debate?
Well, you know, I have to say I'm a little biased because I've worked with them and I do know them on a personal level, but I thought they did a great job. It is always hard to moderate, and I've never moderated a debate where we had more than three candidates, and anytime you add one more candidate, right, it's one more, a variable in the dynamic. It's one more person you have to add in terms of rebuttals and things like that. I thought they were very effective at going through a large range of issues. Some of them felt a little odd. I know there were some that probably people were wondering why they talked about, but capturing a large range of issues in 60 minutes to give you a good sense of at least two-thirds of the field for the Republican primary, since, of course, Rettenauer and Hill didn't qualify and weren't able to be on the stage.
And our pals at Wish TV, they get their opportunity tonight. They've got their turn for a debate. So I'm going to look at it a different way. You are somebody that's moderated debates. I'm somebody that has put together events. I wasn't happy with the way that it was structured last night. I get you want to get as many topics in an hour. I understand that. But some topics I think are more important than others. Like talking about the time zone should not have the same time limit as talking about taxes in Indiana. Does that make sense?
It absolutely makes sense, and I laugh when you say that because I think most people probably share your opinion. And the counter argument I thought was interesting about that particular question, right? It's not innately political. We knew if you had a bingo card, you knew IDEC was going to come up. You knew you were going to hear questions about gasoline tax. You probably suspected something with abortion, maybe with IVF and Alabama state Supreme Court decision would come up too, right? The thing I liked about that question was that I do think it's something people periodically complain about, right? Every time we set our clocks forward or backward.
Yeah.
It's not your average person who doesn't even pay attention to politics. They probably have an opinion about daylight savings time otherwise. I would say where it was put in the debate, being at 7:32, I think is when it came up, so it's nearly halfway through. Is your average person who's not paying attention to politics paying attention at that point? Maybe not. But I will say organizing and figuring out like what are the priorities is always going to be challenging because most people don't watch all the debate. So you may just capture their attention until this didn't have commercial breaks, which helps. But, like the first few questions and someone's like, oh, I'm kind of bored. Let's go look at something else. I think it's not just the order, of course. It's like, what do you include? And inevitably, you can't include it all. You get 60 minutes. You have 1 hour. What they choose to add and to take out, I think, is really difficult.
Dr. Laura, is it important for a debate and or candidate to be somewhat entertaining, and maybe entertaining is the wrong word, but like, Vivek Ramaswamy was a very dynamic, great orator, and I'm not sure that I saw a lot of that on stage. How important is that aspect of being
charismatic?
Charismatic, very good word, charismatic, yeah.
I think it's incredibly important, but there is a slight caveat to it. So to the argument that it's important, people naturally like watching people that are charismatic. Even if you quite frankly disagree on several issues,
sure,
you still can't take your eyes off, or you're like, wow, they're just so articulate. They're speaking to me. They're very personable. And I think in that regard, it can really help a candidate, especially with voters who maybe don't care as much about the policies. They may not know about the policies. There's that old adage in campaigning, right? Somebody you want to have a beer with. And there is a lot of value to that alone. The thing in this particular race, if you're looking, this is a crowded primary. You have six candidates. I don't know that any of them are necessarily overwhelmingly charismatic. In fact, many of them might be characterized as bland, and that's not a judgment call. It's just, you know,
sure, no
one's super outgoing, right? The benefit is that no one's super outgoing, right? You're not competing. And if one of them was very charismatic, the other five would look very dour. But at least you're on an equal playing field. If anything, for voters, that means you do have to pay attention. You have to make a judgment call, not just based on who you want to have a beer with, because you may not know, but you know, who really aligns with what you're interested in? Who has a vision that you agree with? Like, who do you think has the most experience or expertise or the value that you want to see added into that office? And so in a way, for this particular race, I feel like you're taking it out as a variable because it's the same across the board.
Right.
And in that regard, I don't know that it matters as much as it would in most other circumstances.
So, Doctor, we play a game on our show sometime called Am I a Horrible Person? Where listeners basically judge the bejesus out of me. Am I a horrible person? Because when I hear somebody say, he looks like someone I would want to have a beer with, I mock that person. I laugh at that person because you're never going to have a beer with the president or the governor, or the senator. Like, less than 1% will have a beer with those people.
And plus, basing your opinion purely on that and not policy also doesn't really make sense to me.
You are a realistic person. Like, that was the game. Yes, I don't think it's horrible at all. And I think the trick is that charisma matters in the absence of policy, and that is exactly the problem. Is well, if you don't know anything else, who's the person that resonates? I love charismatic people. I'm drawn to people with interesting backstories, right? Like, I think that's human nature. We all are to different degrees. But if I know someone, I know what they stand for, I know what they do, and I don't like it, there's no amount of sparkle, as I like to say, right? There's nothing in terms of how they speak to me or the stories they can tell, the narratives they provide. Like, they would be fun to get drunk with, maybe, but it's not going to be the person I vote for. It's an absence of policy where that matters. And in some ways, it's like you could get into the, is this dangerous for democracy because people are making decisions about beer drinking and not actual voting on policy? And then in that case, again, I'd say that is a concern.
And a little reminder, coming up in our show, it is Beer Sample Wednesday this week. Dr. Laura yes. Wilson, professor of political science, joining us. Were you surprised at all that some of the folks that are not polling at the top, right? Crouch, Doden, those two specifically, every poll that I've seen has got Braun at the top, Chambers close. Those two did not go after any of the front runners last night. If they did, it was very minimal. I did not see any fire. They didn't go after the people that are polling better than them. Was that a surprise to you?
It was a surprise. I think there were a couple missed opportunities, in particular Braun missing a big vote. None of the other candidates went against him. There was a moment where Doden and Crouch kind of sparred, but they were also towards the bottom of polling, so you know, you wonder how effective that necessarily is. I think for me, it's always this paradox of, like, for the entertainment value, I like to see the arguments. And it's not just because it is entertaining, right? But it's getting at the heart of the issue. It's like, no, you know, in your ad, you say this, but in fact, you did that. And look, this candidate's claiming this right now, but we know XYZ. Like, it's actually holding them accountable. And I think that is really important. There's an aspect of that that I think is valuable in campaigns. And when you're looking at a debate, if you don't have that, you're missing out. At the same time, I would say I appreciate, and maybe it's just, you know, Hoosier hospitality. Maybe it's because they're Indiana candidates and maybe they're just all nice enough people. But it didn't get to that border of, like, being so uncivil or disrespectful in any way. I think it was a very civil and respectful debate that people start to say, oh, politics, it's so dirty. Oh, all the politicians are so bad. And I hear that all the time from people. If you looked at that debate this evening or yesterday evening, and if you look at the one tonight, what I think will be predictably the same, these candidates, have a level of respect for each other, right? There is civility in politics, and I think this proves it, and each individual candidate has that as part of their character. Now, I would hope to see a little bit more challenge to their opponents, right? Like calling them out on things, because that's what you're able to do, and that's the opportunity you get to do on the debate stage. But on the flip side, and we have seen, I know you all have seen them, right? The presidential debates where you're laughing, you're crying, you're cringing. Yeah. And then you're like, wait a second, these are going to be the next, one of these guys is the next leader of our country. Like, I didn't get that feeling watching this debate.
And finally, with the debates, Doctor, not so much the debates, but I mean, let's be honest with everybody. It's money, right? It's money that's going to get Absolutely. Someone to the top of the heap of this race. It's how much money you spend, and Braun is that guy, it seems like, so far.
Yeah, he absolutely is. Money matters and name recognition matters, and they're mutually reinforcing, right? So Braun has served in the Senate for 6 years. He obviously has a lot of money of his own, but I think he has that name recognition and power that donors recognize. And Chambers has that, and Crouch has that to a lesser degree, too. I think you also see at this point, since we're at the end of March, there is that aspect of critical mass. Like, people want to support a winner. And so right now they're gauging their bets, like, who's most likely to get this seat? And that's the person you want to support. And you start to see that happening, especially as we're getting close to early voting and we're almost a month away from the election. Money absolutely matters. It's not the end all be all. You could be the best funded candidate and lose, but it's a little bit harder in that case.
Doctor, as a product of the University of Alabama, how does it feel knowing that without Nick Saban, you're going to lose to Tennessee every single year moving forward?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I was hoping you'd just say, like, how did I feel when the announcement happened? And I'll tell you, I cried. I cried for the loss of Nick Saban, but I'm hopeful we'll come back very strong that third week of October. I hate Orange Week in Alabama.
Dr. Laura Wilson, professor of political science at the University of Indianapolis. Doctor, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Are you really okay with this?
Are you okay?
Everything's gonna be okay.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
I'm pretty f***ing far from okay.
Are you okay with this? On the Hammer and Nigel. Oh
yeah! Hammer headline on TMZ.
Okay.
Rebel Wilson claims Sacha Baron Cohen asked her to stick finger up his buttocks.
That's an actual headline.
Oh, that is the headline.
Wow.
You know who Rebel Wilson is, right?
She's probably best known for being Fat Amy on the Pitch Perfect movies, but she's a...
She's a comedic actress.
Right.
And she's lost a lot of weight. And so she's got this new book coming out called Rebel Rising. And so People Magazine got an excerpt, and she is describing things that happened on the set of the Sacha Baron Cohen movie, The Brothers Grimsby. Did you ever see that?
I did not.
Including a lot of inappropriate behavior a la the headline that I just referred to you to. Are you okay with this?
So is it a cop-out answer if I say I want more information? Because what I've learned about these types of things, whether it's Trevor Bauer, whether it's the Duke lacrosse kids, that whole line of believe all women all the time, it's a load of crap. Because there are some gold diggers, there are some skeezers. Now, maybe something did happen. I don't know. And that's why I'm asking permission from the panel here. Is it a cop-out if I say I don't want to jump to conclusions and I want more information?
Here's the thing. He wasn't asking her, from what I understand, to do it like in his dressing room. He was asking her to do a lot of inappropriate, crazy crap on the screen for the sake of the movie.
Like impromptu kind of things.
Yeah, like in Borat, where he's wrestling around with that fat dude that he travels around with, and they're wrestling naked, and
right.
He's got this, you know, his beanbag in his face and stuff like that. That's my understanding of this situation.
So this wasn't a Weinstein casting couch type of situation.
No.
See, this is why it's important that everybody waits before you rush to judge, because you never know what a headline might mean, or even if it's true or not.
Can I just say that the Brothers Grimsby, I don't know if it's worth your time or not, but it's probably not. It's like the worst of the Sacha Baron Cohen movies, but it has one of the funniest scenes involving Rebel Wilson I've ever seen in a movie. So their boyfriend and girlfriend or husband. Brothers Grimsby is about like this top spy, this top, he's like an assassin. But Sacha Baron Cohen is his stupid, doofus, know-nothing hooligan brother.
Okay.
And they have to team up for an assignment. So you got a serious assassin with his idiots. It's a funny premise. So Rebel Wilson is his girlfriend or husband or wife, I'm sorry. And she's on a leather couch. She's sitting in a skirt and she's all horned up, right? And she's pretending like it's a Sharon Stone type of moment in Basic Instinct.
And this is back when she was still a bigger gal.
Really? Yeah. And so you know what happens when you sit on a leather couch. It makes all sorts of noises, when you, especially on skin on skin. And she kind of ever slightly, you know, spreads her. Here, I'll just play the clip for you. Here you go.
Look, I'm exactly like Sharon Stallone in Basic Instincts. Don't worry, that didn't come out my bum. Oh. That one did.
So she's trying to be sexy on this leather couch. Sounds are happening. Some of it's the couch, some of it's not the couch.
And I think at one point, Sacha Baron Cohen's character ends up totally inside the orifice of an elephant, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, it's pretty much really? On par for his yes. types of films,
yes.
right?
Right. Krispy Kreme donuts are coming to McDonald's, Hammer. Oh, my goodness. Three types of Krispy Kreme donuts. Glazed, chocolate, and chocolate ice cream filled. Go on sale at McDonald's restaurants starting later this year. The company has announced this revelation. Are you okay with this?
So you're asking me if I'm okay with the fact that I can go through the drive-thru, get a Big Mac, McNuggets, and a Krispy Kreme donut with cream filling inside?
Yes.
Yes, I'm okay with this! This is the best day of my life! Like, would you look at the great days that have happened in the history of this country? July 4th, 1776.
Sure.
Bunch of other stuff, and now, now, Krispy Kreme partnering with McDonald's. This is amazing. This is the best. And if you weren't a big fat bastard already, I bet my bottom dollar you're going to become one. Because again, when Big Macs and Krispy Kreme high five, you can feel the electricity running through your vein. You can feel the calories moving to your ass. Okay. This is amazing. I'm here for it. Yes, this is something.
Real quick, the online gambling site BetUS is hiring a, quote, wiener concierge to travel around to different major league ballparks and measure their hot dogs. They want the length, girth, and weight for each one. Are you okay with this?
I believe it's a wiener connoisseur.
What'd I say?
Concierge. Concierge, somebody that works at the hotel.
Yeah, wiener. Okay, wiener. God, boy, I messed that one up, didn't I?
All good right. God.
Could
Harrison Silcox is standing by.
Well, no, are you okay with the wiener? Connoisseur?
Say it again.
Connoisseur. There, I got it. Are you okay with the wiener connoisseur? Yes or no? Yes or no?
Yes.
You're okay with it?
Sure. If they're going to pay you to eat the wieners, you can be the connoisseur
there you go. Okay.
Of the wieners.
Yeah, I got that one wrong.
Got a little Beach Grove and Liston going on in here this afternoon.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
It's the Hammer and Nigel Show. Hello, I'm Nigel. Jason Hammer right over there with a special guest on the WIBC hotline.
He is an investigative reporter at the Daily Signal, and he also does the night program, the Tony Kinnett Cast, every evening right after our show at 7 o'clock. Tony Kinnett joins us. TK, how are you?
I am stellar, gentlemen. How are you?
Excellent. I'm good, man. So, do you hate yourself like I do? Did you find yourself watching the full one-hour Indiana gubernatorial debate last night, Tonus?
No, and the funny thing is, my show was on at the same time, and to my delight, as the hour went on, more people started tuning in because it was a far better alternative than watching that snooze-fest circus on TV.
You know, as much as I hate to give our esteemed colleague, Rob Kendall, any sort of credits, he was absolutely right. those people on that stage, they're scared to death to go after Mike Braun. Let's be honest. Mike Braun is probably the front runner here. But I don't know if it's because those people on the stage want to get some sort of gig in his administration or what. But if I'm somebody that's probably looking up at other people in the polling, I go out there guns blazing. And it was kind of a snooze fest yesterday.
You know what? I've kept this quiet long enough. There was a time about 6-7 months ago in which I was trying to provide a little bit of advice to the Doden campaign. I like Eric Doden. I think he's a really good guy. And I thought that he had some interesting ideas, regardless of the fact that a few of his policies needed work. And I advised him 6-7 months ago, you need to spend every single day attacking Braun. No one else matters. You need to show Indiana why you are better than Braun. That should be your only tactic. And the campaign ignored the advice. And as you can see, currently pulling it like 0.8% is not necessarily a great strategy. But hey, that's you know what happens when you decide to run your campaign against a front runner by ignoring the front runner, like DeSantis did for a long time in the presidential campaign, for instance. It doesn't work, and all you end up getting is pocket change and kind of looking like the sad lame duck in a mule competition.
You know, I heard Doden on Rob's show, the Kendall and Casey show, the other day. I really liked I liked him. I liked his ideas. I have no idea who voting for. I have no idea who I'm voting for in this governor's race yet, but I liked him. I don't have as big a problem with Braun as you or maybe Rob Kendall does. I mean, the gas tax thing, it is what it is. I'm wondering now, it just seems like these debates are a lot of platitudes and vagaries, as Rob put it earlier today. Is that a fair assessment?
I think so. I don't have a problem with Braun, actually. I'm currently torn between voting for Braun or for Hill. I think Rittenhour and Hill should have been on that stage, but I like Braun, honestly. He votes close to Mike Lee, which is one of my favorite senators.
Right.
I think the gas tax is something we can negotiate on, honestly. I know that that's like heresy, that like I actually believe that we can negotiate it down, but I think it's doable.
And if you watched that debate last night, and if you missed it, you can go on YouTube. It's only an hour long, and you can skip through it. Taxes, gas tax specifically, didn't get brought up until about 27 minutes into that debate, Tony. To me, like, I don't care what any other polling says. You know, they were talking about immigration in Indiana before they were talking about taxes yesterday. That should have been a much longer part of that debate.
Yeah, I'm sorry, guys. There are things that all Hoosier Republicans agree on. You don't like illegal immigration. Wow, you're breaking some new ground there, Copernicus. You want to lower taxes? Gee willikers, no kidding. Oh, man, you don't like California and New York? Whoa, that's crazy. How about we actually focus on the things that are contested among Hoosier Republicans? I want to know why Braun is different than Crouch, why Crouch is different than, who's that other guy, Chambers or something. That other guy no one knows. Who's different than, I want to know the differences between the candidates, because this is going to shock everyone. It's a primary. I know you're all Republicans. That's the name of the primary. So get into details, please.
Right. But my point being, though, and maybe I didn't explain this well, is that I think the average voter that's watching that, they don't know these people the way that we do. We live in this political bubble. This is how we get down. This is how we make a living. If you're the average person that turned on CBS4 last night and you're seeing these people, maybe you've heard of Mike Braun because he's a senator, but that's about it. You didn't get to hear about why your paycheck is not being as stretched out as it used to be until about 30 minutes in. And in that same debate, they spent the same amount of time on time zone changes than they did on taxes.
Again, this is my criticism of the Indiana GOP. No one has to try, so no one tries. It's like our weird tradition that no one really knows why we've got it, but we do. You know, a lot like daylight savings time, for instance. And now we're sitting here watching this debate, and none of the candidates really shine. I'm not really seeing anything that makes me want to campaign for them. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just feel like, okay, you're all like the same shade of blue, kind of. I guess I'll just pick the one that I like the best, and that's just a real shame given this primary.
Do you think people that aren't like in this bubble like we are hear something from Susan Crouch when she says, hey, I'm going to get rid of the income tax? I mean, do ears perk up on that? I mean, I love Jamie Rittenhour saying she's, you know, going to try to get rid of the, did she say she's going to get rid of the property tax? Is that one of her things, Rittenhour, even though she wasn't on the stage?
I think that she says smaller government, lower taxes. Yeah. I'm not sure which taxes. I haven't listened to all of her stuff with Rob.
She wants to get rid of the IEDC. I know that. But I'm just saying, when somebody says something like that, do ears perk up?
Well, the thing is, it has to reach the ears to perk up. And the fact of the matter is, when I actually look at their political advertisements and who they're trying to communicate to, the average Hoosier isn't getting that message because, again, Hoosiers don't care about the primary because there's not a reason to. So for Suzanne Crouch to come out there and go, axe the tax, it's like, it doesn't really sound like a plan. It just sounds like someone trying to simp for your vote.
Right, right. Like, as a sports betting host, I could say, I'm going to give everybody a free $1 million parlay. That doesn't mean that I'm actually going to do that, Tony. It's just, you know, it's fun for people to hear.
Remember, Andrew Yang ran on this in the Democrat primary. I'm going to give everyone $1,000 a month for life. Yeah. And he literally did the meme, and it did nothing for him. Because guess what? I don't believe that if Suzanne Crouch wins, she's going to axe the income tax. I don't believe her, because she worked at Holcomb's administration for 8 years. And guess what? It didn't happen. So why would it suddenly happen now that she's sitting in the fancier chair? I just don't buy it.
One more thing locally here, and then we'll turn our attention to some national stuff. You were at that Donald Trump Jr. Jim Banks event yesterday. My son was there too. But the thing that I love the most, and I heard this from you and I heard this from my son, there were some liberal reporters there that were having their feelings hurt because their questions were being ignored.
So I also thought this was really funny. I met in person for the first time Adam Wren. He's from Politico, national journalist, and we've spatted a couple of times on Twitter. But he and I went to the press gaggle, and we started asking questions, and both of our questions got answered because we didn't, you know, beat around the bush. But some of these guys behind the camera from local TV stations, whom I won't name, were getting actually pretty flustered and saying things like, well, I already asked that question. I mean, it was like some weird jealous nerd in middle school upset that you answered a question right. And it's so hard to wonder why no one's watching 59 or 6 or 13. What a surprise that the whiny reporters showing up to events aren't getting their questions answered.
How was the event, by the way? What did you think?
It was pretty good. I think that Donald Trump should go sit in a building and not speak for 8 months and let Donald Trump Jr. do all of his campaigning. I'm not joking. It was phenomenal. He hit squatters' rights crap. He hit the woke garbage. He praised, like, American farmers. I was like, dude, give this man the mic. And Trump, honest to God, go play golf for 8 months. Like, seriously.
Tony Kennett from DailySignal.com. He's an investigative reporter and host of the Tony Kennett Cast weeknight here at 7 o'clock, 93 WIBC. Did you happen to read that article I sent you? Hammer and I did an all-new edition of Is It Racist yesterday. There's a school district located in the suburbs of Minneapolis. They are hiring an assistant superintendent to, quote, examine the presence of whiteness in the district. Can you maybe break this down a little bit for us? I mean, your background is in education and STEM and right. Administrator. And I'm wondering, like,
you're white, Tony. Are you the devil?
Yeah.
Well, see, that's the fun thing is that on my census tax forms, technically I'm not. I actually do get to claim the Native American tax credit and free dental and all that other junk.
Look at you, Elizabeth Warren. Congratulations.
Exactly. He's so legit, much. Though.
I'm very excited. I do have the fancy little card, unlike Pow Wow Chow over in Massachusetts. But I will point out that when I was at IPS, my colleagues informed me that I am white presenting, or I am phenotypically white, means you look white. And according to the left.
So that means Sammy Sosa's white now, too? Is that what that means?
I guess. I'm honestly impressed at all the ways we found to root out whiteness. And that's what these positions come down to. Now, it's amazing that in Minneapolis, they would need a position to do this because all of the liberals in that district already do that every day anyway. I mean, good Lord, they got rid of the superintendent who was garbage at her job over at Hamilton Southeastern, and every progressive woman with short hair and Harry Potter glasses hasn't shut up about it for months. So, honestly, I don't know, man. I'm amazed that they're spending a superintendent-level salary on someone to examine whiteness. I'm just picturing that they're, like, walking through the building and, like, sniffing white students as they walk by.
How very Biden of them. What are you working on for the Daily Signal?
I just broke a huge piece on an Arizona school that was providing name change transgender clinic posters to elementary students. And I just found out a few minutes ago, the Arizona Department of Education is actually now investigating that school. So I thought that kind of thing wasn't really going on.
It was just kind of a narrative for the conservatives and a myth.
Right-wing talking points,
yeah,
right?
Right?
Remember how bad Rakita got roasted because he introduced a panel for, or like a portal for parents to track this?
Sure, yeah.
The Indiana Department of Education, oh, we don't know anything about this. Well, in Arizona, their Department of Education actually investigates these kind of things. So it's kind of nice to have.
And you got the big show coming up tonight.
That's right. Bill Whittle's interview finally breaks this evening. And then we've got some great culture stuff because Disney says that Star Wars needs colonizer conversations. So.
Oh, wonderful. Can't wait. Right after our show, 7 o'clock tonight, the Tony Kennett cast. Tony Kennett, you're the best. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
But now,
Hammer and Nigel present
Beer Sample
Wednesday.
I got some beers. Let's drink them, huh?
Beer's on sale, people. Come down and get you some.
Brought to you by Thompson Furniture and Mattress in Columbus with free delivery. Hammer and I are both gone Friday. You're not missing a Beer Sample Friday two times in a row because you were gone last Friday.
Right, that ain't happening. So, the selection I brought today, I think we may have tried it on the show before, but I thought it was topical.
Okay.
So yesterday we had a conversation about movie memorabilia that you would like to have. And
yes,
your choice was the sweater from the dude in The Big Lebowski.
That would be amazing. His sweater, his sunglasses, and maybe even the jellies, sandals that he wears.
Not the rug.
You mean the rug miterated upon by Wu?
So with that being said, I saw this and I thought, you know what? We were just talking about this. Here you go, Nige.
Oh, yeah. Right. Bad Dad Brewing. The dude abides. I love it. This is, it's a Pilsner from Bad Dad Brewing.
And such an awesome looking can. I'll take a picture of this and I'll put it up on our social media.
It's got like a sketch of the dude on it almost.
Listen, it's not Friday.
I know.
But it's my Friday. Cheers, everybody.
Oh, man, that is so good.
You're going to need about five or six more of these bad boys to get through that night number two of debate tonight.
Oh, boy, I can't wait. Yeah, we'll have all the action tomorrow. I'll watch it so you won't have to. Ladies and gentlemen, a Wednesday edition of Beer Sample Friday.